For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Proverbs chapter 1, the book of Proverbs. This is right around the middle of your Bible, right after the book of Psalms. I'd like to lead off with a quote. Where is the life we have lost in living? Where is the wisdom we've lost in knowledge? Where is the knowledge we have lost in information? T.S. Eliot wrote those words about 80 years ago. And I don't know if this resonates with you guys, but I know for me, I can see what he's saying here. I can relate to the words that he's writing here. You know, this whole idea that we are so busy trying to live our lives, trying to just survive, that we lose track of actual life, of living life, the way life is meant to be lived. That we can be buried under information to the point where it's obscuring our knowledge, and we can have so much knowledge and yet we don't even know how to use it. We don't even know which end is up. And this concept of wisdom, you know, this it's funny because, you know, T.S. Eliot, he's writing this 80 years ago when, like, you know, the hot new invention was the radio. And you think about today, we live in the information age. You know, we've got so much information right at our fingertips. We got smartphones. We can have the full internet at our disposal at any time. We've got Wikipedia, where you can get any information you want on any subject. News outlets pumping news at us 24/7, both via the internet and via, you know, a dozen different cable channels. We got electronic books that we can zip right down to our electronic reader in a heartbeat or on our computer. We've got podcasts where, you know, you plug in your MP3 player to charge it up, and the next time you go to it, there's a dozen new, you know, different programs and lectures on there that you've downloaded without even realizing you're doing it. And so, you know, this information is just overwhelming. You know, even the explosion of information from 10 or 15 years ago, as the internet has really taken hold. I was listening to the radio the other day, and the DJ was like, you know, he lays out some sort of obscure trivia question. He's like, if you know the answer, we'll take the eighth caller and you can win a pair of tickets to whatever concert. And I was just thinking, that is the stupidest game you can imagine. Because everybody can just take the question, type it into Google, and then call. I mean, that sort of trivia question, trivia contest, that would have made sense 10 or 15 years ago. But today, it just doesn't even make sense at all. Because we've got so much information coming at us. And yet the question is, in spite of all of this information, are we really living better lives? Are we prepared to say that because we have information, therefore our lives are better, we're happier, we're more fulfilled, our relationships are more successful, our marriages are more successful, our families are more successful? And I think that a lot of us would have to say, actually, no. Honestly, I just feel a lot more confused. I feel buried under everything that's coming at me. You know, what really the case is today is that we are awash in a flood of information, and yet we're starving for wisdom. Wisdom, how to really live life. I had a recent experience that's related to this diagram here. This is the first couple pages of a diagram for a universal remote control. And man, I was down at my folks' place for Thanksgiving this past weekend, and I'm sitting there in front of their 60-inch television, the cable box, the Blu-ray player, something else, I don't even know what it was. I've got like 5 remote controls in front of me. And you know, I'm like, you know, I went to college for 6 years, computer science. And I feel like I'm my grandma. I just want to watch the football game, for the love of God. Completely, you know, information, but knowledge, wisdom, no way. And unfortunately, a lot of us feel this way about our lives. Totally overwhelmed, like I've learned all these things, I know a lot of things, and yet it seems like when it comes to living life, I'm striking out every time I go up to the plate. Wisdom is really the art of knowing how to use the knowledge that we possess. You know, knowledge is the possession of information. Wisdom is the ability to use that in a skillful way, to live life skillfully, to live life well. That's really what wisdom is, and that's really what we need to learn. Proverbs, as one author puts it, tells you not how to make a living, but how to be skillful in the lost art of making a life. And one of the cool things about Proverbs is the whole thing is addressed. You'll see several times in this book, the author will say, "Listen, my son, listen, my child." And it's addressed as from a parent to their child. And what's cool is that God has captured this wisdom, and he has preserved it for us in the scriptures for every single one of us to learn from. And so even if we didn't get the kind of training that we thought we needed from our parents growing up, the kind of upbringing that we wanted, God says, "I got you covered. I got the book of Proverbs. I got some other wisdom literature as well in the Bible, but this is what we're going to be looking at for the next couple of months. How to be skillful in the lost art of making a life. How to use the knowledge that we possess." And this is extremely practical. One of the cool things about the book of Proverbs, it is just, it's like boiled down, pre-digested theology. And we can just kind of saunter up to it like a baby bird to its mother and receive the it just straight down into our bloodstream. It's really practical, you know, how to make money and what to do with it once you get it. Proverbs talks a lot about money and managing money. Talks a lot about the poor as well. How to make friends and how to grow in your relationships. How to become the kind of person that knows how to build a relationship, that knows how to resolve a conflict, the kind of person that other people want to be friends with. And as part of us, our problem is we whine about how we don't have any friends and why don't people love me more, and the problem might be on your end. The problem might not be with everybody else in your life. The problem might be with you. And maybe there's some things you need to learn about relationships, some practical wisdom. What about choosing a spouse, having a happy marriage and a successful family? I don't know if any of us are interested in that, if we're thinking about doing that anytime in the near future. But Proverbs has a lot to say on that subject. I don't know how many people are up into avoiding temptation and trouble in their lives, but Proverbs has a ton of stuff on this right here. Controlling our feelings and our words. How to speak rightly. Speech is actually the most frequent topic in the book of Proverbs. How to talk well. You know, if you talk well, you can fill your table with food. If you don't talk so well, you get your teeth bashed in. Also, building godly character, becoming the kind of person that is more and more like Christ. You know, these are the subjects that Proverbs gets into, and these are the kinds of things that we're going to be looking at over the next couple months. Tonight, though, we're just going to look at the first seven verses, basically, with a few drawing from a few other places in there, but we're just going to work our way through the first seven verses. This is the prologue. And it really is going to tell us three things. One is the author of Proverbs, verse 1. It's also going to talk about the benefits of reading the Proverbs. It says, here is how you will benefit from reading this book. It's really like, it's the clearest intro to any book in the Bible as far as telling you who wrote it and what this whole thing is about, why you should read this. And finally, it's going to give us a couple things that we can do, attitudes we can cultivate, things we need to know in order to benefit in a maximum way, in order to gain as much wisdom as possible from the Proverbs. So why don't we go ahead and get into this? Proverbs chapter 1, the author, verse 1. These are the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. All right, so he identifies himself as Solomon, the son of David. King Solomon, in other words. King of Israel from 971 to 931 B.C. This is an ancient book. The Proverbs of Solomon. You know, he wrote most of the book. There are a few parts that were not written by him. They may have been compiled by him, but there's a few parts where it says, these are the words of King Lemuel. And we're like, who's King Lemuel? Well, we don't know. But that may have been something that, Solomon was a student of wisdom in his area, and he surpassed them all. But it's possible he was collecting wisdom from other ancient Near Eastern wisdom traditions. And so he was king of Israel, 971 to 931 B.C., renowned for his wisdom. We read about Solomon as a very young man, in his early 20s, thrust onto the throne of Israel amidst controversy after his father David died. And so here he is, a very young man, put in a very significant leadership position. It'd be pretty scary. You know, it's like your football team's got a true freshman at the quarterback. And that can be a pretty scary position. And so we see this interaction he has with God, where God comes to him and says, whatever you want, I'll give it to you. And he says, I need wisdom. to govern this great and awesome people of yours. I'm like a little child. I don't know what I'm doing. I need wisdom so I can be a wise and good king over your people. And God says, all right. And we see that Solomon's wisdom became world famous. In 1 Kings 4, it tells us this. He was wiser than anyone else, including Ethan the Ezrahite. Yeah. Also the sons of Mahal, He-Man. Wiser than He-Man. Calcol and Darda. He composed some 3,000 proverbs and wrote 1,005 songs. We don't have all of his proverbs. We're going to learn what a proverb is. It's basically a little two-line couplet. We've got, there's only about 800 verses in the book of Proverbs, so there's a lot we don't have. But there's quite a few that we do have, as well as 1,005 songs. The book of Proverbs is actually arranged. It's got the first 9 chapters or so. It's got a little bit more of a flow of thought to it. It's more of a series of poems that are stitched together. But then once you hit chapter 10, it basically goes totally fortune cookie on us. You know, each verse can be completely different than the next one. It's almost literally like a dump truck backed up and dropped like a metric ton of fortune cookies on you. And he's just kind of going through and picking them and reading them, and they're typing them in as you go. I mean, there's a little bit of connection, but it really is just a bunch of sayings. And I guess they have Christian fortune cookies that cut up all the proverbs and put them in the cookies. Anyway, it's true. I know that because I was like, I wonder if I could start a business. And somebody already got there. He could speak with authority about all kinds of plants. He could also speak about animals, birds, small creatures, and fish. So it's not just limited to how to live life, but it's understanding the created order, the world around us. And understanding how things work, how things fit together. It's kind of like philosopher crossed with a scientist is really what he was, which was a sage, which is my next point. He popularized the sage. The sage, the wise man. You know, in Israel, they actually they had 4 different leadership type positions. Some of us might be familiar with 3 of them: the prophet, the priest, and the king. Okay, we're all different characters we see in at various points in the history of Israel. But we also see, especially with Solomon, he thrusts the sage into the limelight, into the foreground. Solomon was a king. He also was a prophet, but he was also a sage. And a sage is a wise person. Interesting thing about the sage and about wisdom literatures, they don't appeal to Moses. They would have had scripture at this time. They would have had at least the first 5 books of the Bible, plus probably several others after that, plus quite a number of the Psalms. But you don't read in the book of Proverbs, I am the God who parted the Red Sea. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That doesn't come up at all, which is pretty weird when you read the rest of the Bible, because God is the God of history. They're not appealing to the acts of God throughout history. And yet, you know, it's Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. He's clearly coming from a Mosaic perspective. He's one that's coming from an Israelite worldview. That understanding of the way God is and the way the world is. And so he's looking at things through that lens. You know, the prophets, they receive visions and auditions, which would be like an oral vision, I guess, something they would hear. The word of the Lord came to me and said this, and they wrote it down. The sage, on the other hand, they didn't get some vision or dream. They were observers. They observed the created order around them through the lens of faith. They looked at things with the knowledge of God is there. God is the creator. There is something that undergirds the world around us. It makes sense. It's a rational place. Things work a certain way. And the sage observes that, builds on the observations of others as well. For example, okay, the Epicurean philosopher, they might look out at the world and say, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. On the other hand, the sage, they would say that a little bit differently. They would say, eat, drink, and be merry, because these are all gifts from God. They see a creator, and they see that even though a pleasure is good, it's not platonic, it's not that material is bad. It's pleasure is good, and yet it's not ultimate in my life. It's not my God, it's not the top thing. And those things, even those things need to be arranged in light of God, the God who gives these things and the one who set these things in place. And so the sage is the one who authored the Proverbs. And Solomon was a sage. Now, he goes on to tell us some of the benefits of reading the Proverbs. Let's look at some of these in verses 2, 3, and 4. He says, these are to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge, and discretion. Okay, so there's a lot of terms here. They're going to come up a number of times throughout this book. We just kind of want to get a sense of what is he talking about? What are the benefits of reading the Proverbs? What are the different things associated with wisdom? Well, the word wisdom is the Hebrew word chakmah. It's a pretty cool word. You have chakmah. That's the question in the book of Proverbs. And you can have chakmah if you're willing to get into this book. You know, the word is associated with skill. For example, we see in the book of Exodus, it refers to a number of different individuals who are skilled at weaving, woodworking, metalworking. For example, in Exodus 28, instruct all the skilled craftsmen whom I filled with the spirit of wisdom. Same word in both cases there. Have them make garments for Aaron the high priest. So these were craftsmen who knew how to go out in the field, how to harvest the linen, how to spin it. How to harvest the flax, spin it into linen, and then weave it into a garment. And then also how to take different dyes and how to work with them. You know, so it took quite a bit of skill for them to do this. It also uses the same word to refer to the woodworkers. They know how to cut down a tree. They know how to cut it just into the right shape that it's all going to fit together and build this tabernacle that God wanted them to build. The metalworkers knew how to, you know, extract precious metals from the ground, pound them down into sheets of metal and then to put them over the different decorations and instruments in the temple. And so these are skilled individuals. They're skilled in these areas. Also, we see referring to skilled at sailing. In Psalm 127, it talks about these sailors who are in a storm, and the storm is winning. And it says the sailors reeled and staggered like drunkards, and they were at their wits' end. They were at the end of their chakmah, the end of their skill. They were out of their league. And they're basically hoping they don't die. The storm is beating them. They're not skilled enough for this level of a storm. You know, they can handle like a level 3, and this is like a level 5. Skilled at leadership, for example. We see this in reference to Moses as well as in reference to King Messiah, that it promises would one day come. It says, the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding. He won't judge by appearance. He will give justice to the poor. He's going to be wise enough that he knows how to administer justice. There's kind of a judicial aspect to this. And in the Proverbs, and in most wisdom literature, it talks about the skill of living life. The skill of living life. And it's mainly in terms of relational values and spiritual values. That's the way the book of Proverbs uses this. Are you a skilled liver of life? Are you a novice? Are you an amateur? Are you an expert at living life? You can become basically an expert at living life. Not that you're going to be perfect or anything, but you can become a wise person, a skilled person. And also not just a skilled person, but one that can impart that skill to other people too. You know, the carpenter has skill. Why do they have skill? It's because, well, one, I mean experience, but also because they understand the properties of the wood. And because they understand the wood, they understand the thing that they're working with, they're good at working with it. For example, the Wright brothers. This right here. This is a replica of their initial primitive wind tunnel that they made to do their different tests on aerodynamics. You know, I always thought that they just kind of like got a bike and some wings and they just rode and flapped and got lucky. But no way. They had been working with and testing rigorously the properties of aerodynamics for many years before they ever tried, before they ever succeeded. And so they were experts in this. They were skilled. They understood the thing that they were working with, and therefore they were able to work with it well. Some pretty remarkable breakthroughs. Or there's my porch swing. A negative example here. Of not understanding the thing that you're working with. So shortly after my wife and I were married, maybe like a month and a half after, my parents gave us this porch swing for our front porch on this house, this new house we had just purchased. And so I'm like, all right, mom and dad are up for the weekend. Dad and I, we're just going to put this puppy up, you know, maybe take a half hour or so, just attach it into the ceiling. Everything's going to be fine. So, you know, we get our little tool screws and we screw it up into the ceiling and we hang the chain on there. And, you know, I had gotten up, the ceiling was made of plywood. And so I'd gotten my stud finder out and I'm moving it around on there and it's just beeping the entire time. And I was like, well, I mean, the whole thing must be good. I mean, I knew enough that you had to find, like when you're hanging something inside, you got to find a stud in the wall. And so I'm thinking, well, we got wood everywhere, so I guess it doesn't matter where I put it. And so, you know, we put it up in there and then we got to sit down on there. Boom. Little chains pop out of the ceiling. Bing. You know, it falls about 8 inches or so. It was pretty close to the ground. So I was like, huh, I guess that wasn't strong enough. Guess we need something a little stronger. So we go out and we go up to the Home Depot, I think, and we get, you know, some big old fat eye hooks to screw into the ceiling. We get these springs so that, you know, it won't be like a jolt or it'll kind of, you know, cushion the blow a little bit when you sit down on it. We also got about 8 lag screws and this big 2x4, okay? So the plan was to attach the 2x4 to the ceiling, to put a bunch of screws in it to attach that to the wood, and then to attach the porch swing into the 2x4. A few of you are laughing because you know how this is going to turn out. The rest of you are like me at the time. I'm thinking, you know, I got like 7 or 8 bolts in there. I'm kind of sitting around. I was like, all right, this feels pretty good. What I didn't realize is that what I had actually built was a spring-loaded 2x4 launcher. And so I'm in there using the restroom. My wife had gone downstairs to get some money for the pizza and a pop, and she walks out onto the porch. And the first thing she sees are my mom and dad sitting on the ground. My mom's mouth is bleeding. There's a 2x4 lying across their laps. Then she turns, and the pizza guy's just standing there like, did somebody order a pepperoni? Keep the change, get out of here. My mom actually lost her front tooth over that incident. It's really bad. So, you know, that's lack of skill. That was, I didn't know the difference between, you know, a 3.5-inch 2x4 and a half of actual wood and a 1/2-inch of plywood, which is really just wood chopped up and glued together. It just yanked right out of there. And so, unfortunately for a lot of us, this is how we're living our lives. You know, we don't understand how it works and we end up with a 2x4 to the face. And the thing is, it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to learn the hard way. That's the beautiful thing about Proverbs. You don't have to learn the hard way. You can learn vicariously by actually plugging into the source of wisdom, God, and having God impart his wisdom to you. The wise person understands people. They understand the created order. And in spite of all the technological advances that have happened in the past 3,000 years, since Solomon wrote his Proverbs, people are basically the same. The way relationships work is basically the same. There's unique situations, there's new factors in play, a lot of new factors in play, and yet a lot of it, a shocking amount of this, has not changed. And that's the great thing about Scripture. It has this timeless quality to it that can speak to us, even though this was written thousands of years ago. It speaks to us like it was written yesterday by somebody that knows me and has been reading my journal. Okay, so it's got some things to say to us. You know, this is why the sage's word is literally called law. In 1:8, he says, don't neglect your father's instruction and don't ignore your mother's Torah. You know, this is like the law. It's like the law of gravity. And this is just the way things are. And, you know, if you ignore the law of gravity, you can be up for some pretty serious consequences. And if you ignore these laws right here, the way things work, you can be up for a pretty miserable life. You can end up having to learn some things the hard way. And some people get so beat down by that they never recover. Some people are too proud to ever listen. And they just continue to go right ahead in their same stubborn direction, like the fool that we're going to talk about throughout the book of Proverbs. Well, it's not just wisdom. There's also instruction. This comes up a couple of times here, right? To know instruction and to receive instruction. This word, musar, usually has a note of sternness. It's not just neutral knowledge. It's like warning up to chastening. There's kind of an element of rebuke here. It's an element of discipline. And sometimes we need that. Sometimes we need to be told we're wrong and to be set back in the right direction, like any good parent would do. Also, to discern the sayings of understanding. This is the same word here. To understand the sayings of understanding. It's to distinguish between one thing and another thing, or to understand. Kind of like it says. Instruction in wise behavior. Haskel, good sense. Usually associated with success. So this kind of has an element of street smarts to it. One of the cool things about this is you don't have to be a victim of what life dishes out to you, but you can anticipate that and you can learn how to roll with that. You can learn how to deal with life in such a way that you can live a successful life no matter what happens to you. Prudence and discretion, these are two related, it's kind of a related word group here. Shrewd and attentive are other ways to render these two words, shrewdness and attentiveness. You know, this is the person that's highly aware. It's very insightful. It's constantly watching. And not just watching, but is also able to develop a plan, you know, based on the information that's coming at them. They're a person that ends up becoming pretty quick on their feet because they're constantly alert. That's one of the main emphases in Proverbs, is just looking around you, keeping alert and understanding the situation. Ironically, here they're used positively, but the majority of uses in Scripture, these are actually negative traits. Like it's used of Satan, who's highly shrewd, highly attentive, always watching. And he's this way probably more than anybody. And yet we can harness this power for good. Shrewdness, attentiveness, insightfulness, ability to make a plan and execute it. And then knowledge bookends this whole thing, da'at. And it implies not so much an informed mind like head knowledge. It more carries a sense of knowing truth and really knowing God himself. Knowing a truth and knowing God himself. It's more grasped, truth that is grasped more than learned. You got to live this to understand it. This is not the kind of thing you can just look in a book. You know, you can read all about how to swim. And yet you got to get out into the pool if you really want to learn how to swim. There's only so far that head knowledge can take you. You know, and really, according to the Bible, especially according to the wisdom literature, the opposite of ignorance is not knowledge. The opposite of ignorance is obedience. It's to put into practice the things that you should know. You can have tons of knowledge but be ignorant as far as the wisdom literature is concerned. And yet if we put it into practice, then we're really going to know that truth. We're going to know it in a deep way. And they give prudence to the naive, and to the youth they give knowledge and discretion. This is kind of cool. It offers hope for the youth and the naive. You know, that the word youth, I mean, it's a pretty neutral word. It just means a young person. But the word naive, petit, that one is one of the types of fools in Proverbs. You know, there's all these different words. There's different kinds of fools in Proverbs, and we're going to look at pretty much all of them over the course of our study. And the naive, the simpleton, it might say in some of our translations. The simple-minded. You know, this one is a little bit negative, but not nearly as negative as a lot of the other fool designations that we'll look at. You know, really, this is the kind of person that is too young to have wisdom. This is the raw, unrefined material. Kind of a blank slate, if you will. And this would probably be the category that many of us in this room would fall in. You know, still pretty young. At this point in the game, it's unclear which way this person is going to go. You know, this person tends to believe everything they hear, unfortunately, to their demise. Proverbs 14 and 15, the naive believes everything, but the sensible man considers his steps. You know, you tell this person something like, yeah, that sounds pretty good. Yeah, okay, that sounds good. There's kind of an innocence here, but it can be an innocence that refuses to learn right from wrong, which way is up and which way is down. The naive often doesn't even know why bad things are happening to him. you know, like a rat that keeps pressing the thing that shocks them in some sort of a science experiment. Unfortunately, the naive can have that experience. Proverbs 22:3, the prudent sees the evil and hides himself. They see where this is heading, and they take a different route. But the naive, they just go right on forward, and they're punished for it. They just stumble right into the thing that is waiting for them. One of the things you'll see in Proverbs as well is that wisdom is personified as a woman that calls out, that invites people to come to her and listen. But folly is also personified as a woman, the bad kind of woman, that calls out to this naive youth and wants him to come with her. And so you kind of see this, it's like this naive person walking through this marketplace, and there's billboards on both sides, and both are calling out to them. And the question we see in a lot of cases is, which way is this person going to go? Which choice are they going to make? Or which woman are they going to pick? The right one or the wrong one? Wisdom or folly? The naive is desperately in need of instruction. In fact, it's so desperate that if he does not get instruction, or she does not get instruction, they're headed for death. They will become a full-blown fool. And once you become a fool, that's a pretty difficult condition to remedy. Well, let's just spend the last couple verses here talking about how to benefit from Proverbs. We've seen who the author is. We've seen the benefits of reading Proverbs. Now let's talk about how to benefit from this book, how to gain wisdom as much as possible. It says in verse 5, a wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. And so it's talked about the fool in verse 4, that they need this. And here he says a wise man, they need this too. You know, to hear and to acquire, and this is really the first principle. There's three of these. We need a humble listening posture. A humble listening posture. That's what the wise person does. And notice he doesn't even say they need to do this. In some translations, it takes it that way, but I think this is the more accurate way to take that. They just will do this. They will hear an increase in learning. They will acquire this wise counsel. They will receive this. They're going to drink this up. You need to listen up and drink this in. As you sit under these, especially the wisdom literatures, you sit under the word here, you just need to come in with an open heart, an open mind, and to listen humbly to what it has to say to you. One of the fascinating things about Proverbs is that the Proverbs, they don't talk that much about self-discipline, about whipping myself into shape and why don't you get it together. What it talks a lot more about is receiving the words, observing reality, internalizing that, allowing that to sink in. That's one of the things about the fools. They don't even want to hear any other perspective other than their own. And they might beat themselves up to go a particular direction, but they don't know why, and they really think the other way would be better. If you would just take a little bit of time, and if you would observe and hear what the Word has to say to you on this, and the way that life is, what you'll find is that the way you think about things starts to be transformed. And that you'll start doing the right thing, not just because it's the right thing, but also because it makes the most sense. It's the best way to live. That's the only way to truly find life. You know, wise people, of course, don't need anyone to tell them this. The wise people are just going to go for it. You know, you can't keep them away from the book of Proverbs because they know how badly they need it. That's the mark of a wise person right there, understanding what we've got here at our disposal and going after it no matter what. They know they'll never outgrow their need for wisdom. The wise person is wise enough to know how little they still know of the world around them. They're often not making these black and white dogmatic statements. They have a category for the gray areas of life. They understand that in this situation you might do this under certain conditions and you might do this other thing under certain conditions, and it might not matter. Both of those might be okay. The wise person understands. You know, wisdom, it's not like some video game where once you beat the game you can just move on to something else. It's more like this just majestic mountain range where, you know, there's little hills for the naive and the simple to hike. But, you know, for the advanced backpackers, the advanced hikers, there's really no limit to the difficulty that you can undertake when it comes to wisdom. And wise people are often up for a challenge. They're always wanting to stretch themselves and learn more. Well, secondly, we see verse 6. So in addition to that humble learning posture, we also need, it says, the goal here is to be able to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. And so what he's talking about here is you need to understand how to interpret a proverb. Kind of uses a couple of different terms for the form that this wisdom takes. A proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. A proverb. You know, when you think about a proverb, we actually have quite a bit of these today. I don't know if you realize this. Modern proverbs. You know, like where there's smoke, there's fire. Okay, that's a catchy little visual image. You know, what does that mean? Well, you know, where there's some symptoms of something, if something kind of smells fishy, then there may be more there that's hidden. It's not literally saying that if you see any smoke, there must be fire somewhere. No, I mean, that would be to press this far too literally and to make it say what it wasn't intended to say. But to explain, you could probably explain, take a couple of paragraphs to explain what this means, but that's not nearly as memorable or as catchy as this right here. The early bird gets the worm. Not necessarily always. These are general maxims that are basic, that are mainly true, and they also, sometimes they rhyme or they have kind of a meter to them, you know, like haste makes waste, or a penny saved is a penny earned. Yeah, right. So, you know, we've got all these embedded, and, you know, we don't even have to think to regurgitate these. They're embedded so deep, and that's the way that proverbs work. They tend to lodge pretty deep and be there for us when we need them. Proverbs 14:4, here's an example of a kind of a pithy little proverb. Without oxen, a stable stays clean, but you need a strong ox for a large harvest. All right, what's that talking about? Well, you know, it's saying, on the one hand, it's kind of a pain to clean up after your ox, especially the stable where all the, you know, the crap is. But on the other hand, it's kind of nice to have that ox when harvest time comes around. And so, you know, it's not just talking about animals here. It's saying that, you know, there are certain things where there's pros and cons, and I think relationships are that way. You know, on the one hand, it's kind of annoying sometimes to have to deal with cleaning the stable, if you know what I mean. On the other hand, you really can't do without people, and it's worth it. And that's just kind of the way it is. You just got to deal with it. You know, the goal of the sage in these proverbs, it was to be short and memorable, not technically precise. Remember, these are people that couldn't afford to own books, and a lot of them couldn't even read. And so these, you know, this proverb here for us is like, you know, 15 or 20 words or whatever. For them, that would have been like 6 or 7 or 8 words. And it would have rhymed or it would have had some sort of a rhythm or a meter to it or whatever. So some of this is lost on us in translation, but, you know, their goal is not to be, you know, because it's like without, you know, what, well, you might have oxen, but you might have chickens, and then your stable wouldn't stay clean, you know, so it's not the point. And we can't press these too far, otherwise we get into some really weird doctrines that we're concluding from the Proverbs. The goal is to try to figure out the main point without pressing every detail fully and literally. What is it saying? What does it mean that the early bird gets the worm? That's the point. And it's often bank shot rather than the direct assault. You know, it's kind of that way, like the parables of Jesus are kind of similar to this, where it's like, he's like, he'd kind of say these things and be like, him who has ears to hear, let him hear. And that's like, if you want to hear, then you can. And sometimes it's kind of, you know, they're like little jabs or whatever, these proverbs, where you kind of realize what it's saying. And that's kind of, one of the cool things about reading these is they often can kind of poke through the facade that I've got up and can convict the heart. So you gotta know how to interpret proverbs, and you gotta know that we're gonna see a lot of these, and we're not gonna cover them straight through. We're gonna do a little bit more of a topical arrangement as this series goes on. Verse 7, though, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. And the third thing we gotta understand is we need to cultivate the fear of the Lord. A very important concept in wisdom literature, a very important concept in the book of Proverbs. What is it talking about? Well, it's not talking about fear like in the sense of being terrified of God or like some sort of an abused, you know, puppy or whatever that's waiting for God to lower the hammer. This is devotion. This is deep reverence. Reverence might be a better term than fear. fear is bad in the connotations that come to mind for us. And eagerness to listen. We have so much respect for what he has to say that we're hanging on every word. That's what it's talking about here. And so we approach God prayerfully and humbly, eager to hear what he has to say to us. We know that this is not just me observing the world around me, but we know there's a vertical component here. We know there's a part of us as humans that doesn't want to hear what God has to say and is committed to coming to conclusions that exclude God. And that distorts how we view the world around us. And so, you know, this is why we pray before we approach the Word. It's not like, you know, sometimes I think we view prayer before looking at the Bible as kind of like we view singing the national anthem before a sporting event. We're like, okay, this thing, and we're kind of looking around, when is this thing going to be over with? And no, that's the wrong attitude. It's an opportunity to come before the Lord in our hearts, to come in with the right attitude, to come in with a learning perspective, a humble perspective. And that's the fear of the Lord is going to cultivate that in us. Proverbs 2:5 is similar. He says, then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. Understanding the fear of the Lord is to discover the knowledge of God. And this is really where Hebrew wisdom literature differs from the others. You know, we've actually got a bunch of different examples of wisdom literature from this time period. And there's a lot of overlap in the first 5 or 6 verses of this book. But when you get to verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's completely different. And that's one of the points that Solomon is making here, is that, you know, you can make some observations about the world, and yet the starting point, the foundation for all wisdom, the foundation for understanding the world, the foundation for living a successful life, is you got to understand the one who made it all, the Creator, the one who set all this in motion, and the one who's spoken to us about the way he is and the way the world is. On the other hand, like it says, the fool despises wisdom. You can see the scoffing and the refusal to even listen. That's about as far as you can get. You know, this word for fool here, this is another one of our fools in Proverbs, the Ewil. You know, as we study Proverbs, we see this guy, he's quarrelsome, he's always getting in fights. As soon as he opens his mouth, you can usually tell that this is a fool. He's always picking fights, always thinks his way is right. He's very flippant. He spurns advice. One thing that he does not want to hear is what anybody else has to think about this situation. I know what's up. I know what's right. I'm going to head this direction. And I don't really care what you've got to say. I'm going to do this anyway. They might nod and, you know, get kind of a blank look on their face, but you know that it's not penetrating. And they don't really care. They don't care about reality. It's the problem with the fool. They just don't care about the way the world is. And so they just head off in their direction and they're going to end up ruining their life. This is the possible fate of the naive. If the naive does not get instruction, they're going to end up as this kind of fool or one of the other kinds of fools that we'll look at. Early treatment is essential. Early detection and early treatment are crucial for avoiding this negative terminal condition of fooldom. Proverbs 27 puts it this way. He says, although you pound a fool in a mortar with a pestle along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. You take your little bowl and you just grind and grind and grind. You throw them in a blender and you just run it on the highest speed. Doesn't matter. Pound all you want. They will not relinquish their foolishness. And then at the end of this, end of chapter 1, it talks about the eventual fate of the fool. This is wisdom calling out at the end of Proverbs chapter 1. Remember, wisdom is personified as a woman calling out to the naive. She says, they rejected my advice and they paid no attention when I corrected them. Therefore, they must eat the bitter fruit of living their own way, choking on their own schemes. For simpletons turn away from me to death. Fools are destroyed by their own complacency. What a tragic irony. Their very refusal to listen is the very thing that destroys their lives. And I don't want any of you to face this fate. And if you do face it, it won't be because I didn't warn you about it. To listen to what God has to say, to listen to what his word has to say, and to avoid the path of destruction. to have a little reverence for God and to admit that maybe, just maybe, I know less than the God of the universe. That just maybe it might behoove me to listen to another perspective other than my own. If we take that perspective, you will choke on the bitter fruit of their own ways, and it will destroy your life. I've seen too many people get their lives destroyed because they would not listen. I don't want any of you to experience that. But he says, on the other hand, all who listen to me will live in peace, untroubled by fear of harm. That's the other alternative that we can have. Peace. Do you want peace in your life? Is your life lacking peace? God offers peace. A peace that surpasses all understanding. A peace that will leave you untroubled by fear of harm. Not that bad things won't happen in your life, but you're going to be able to deal with those. Your life is going to be set up to deal with even the difficult things that come your direction. But then again, you'd be surprised at how much trouble you can circumvent simply by listening to God and taking a little bit more of a humble perspective. So this is the eventual end of these two paths. Let's just draw a few conclusions here. One, ask yourself this question. Do you want to learn how to truly live? Do you just want to make a living, or do you want to make a life? Do you just want to survive? Or do you want to really live? Christ says, I came that men might have life and have it abundantly. And that offer still stands for you. Do you want the life that only he can offer? If you do, I got two suggestions for you. One, you need to turn to the only one who offers wisdom. You need to plug into the source of life, the source of wisdom. You know, Solomon's pretty good. The Proverbs are pretty good. But Jesus said, you know what? People came from all over the world to listen to Solomon. But he says, now someone greater than Solomon is here, talking about himself. I'm offering you true wisdom, true life. Do you want it? And two, you need to come back to drink in the rest of the book of Proverbs. All right, well, let's leave some time here for prayer. Yeah, Lord, thank you that we've got a room full of people here who are pretty young and can benefit a lot from this book. These are the kind of people that you had in mind when you preserved this book for us in the canon, Lord, especially like the audience of this book, God. So I pray that you would help us to listen to what you have to say to us, Lord. And I pray that we would become wise people as a result of us spending some time in the book of Proverbs. Amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.